Okay, Marshall, if you'll go ahead.
The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Smith, Judge Ross, Judge Connolly, the Honorable Tracy M. Smith presiding.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. We're here for our third oral argument this morning, and the case is A20-1132, Shilpa Gupta, petitioner appellant versus Amit Mahipal, respondent. We will have, although this is taking place on Zoom, our ultimate recording will be an audio recording only. Counsel, each of you has 15 minutes for your primary argument. Counsel for appellant, you have 5 minutes for rebuttal if you choose to use it. And each of you starts your primary argument, if you could state your name and the party you represent for the record. And we are ready to go with appellant's argument.
Thank you, and good morning, Your Honors. My name is Zachary Marsh. I'm appearing here on behalf of Dr. Shilpa Gupta, who is the appellant in this matter. Now, just a couple of initial matters. It's undisputed the standard of review here is abuse of discretion, and it is appellant's position that the district court here has erred by improperly applying the statutory factors related to a move from state request for the party's two minor children. Now, the appellant is relying on the Comp v. Comp holding, where that if one factor is found to be clearly erroneous, the district court's decision should be reversed. Here it is our position that there were a number of factors that the court applied to the circumstances. A very brief recap of the basic facts. This again was a request to relocate two minor children from Minnesota to the state of Illinois. The parties shared joint legal and joint physical custody of the children, with the children primarily residing with my client during the school year, spending the greater share of the summers with respondent, Dr. Mahipal. The order in question is a July 6, 2020 order, and it was the second request to move the children to Ohio that my client had made, both being denied. The prior request was denied June 18, 2019. And as I'm sure you've seen in the order, the 2020 order, there is a heavy reference to the 2019 order, and a number of those findings have been incorporated. A couple of important facts to keep in mind here. Dr. Gupta, my client, the appellant, is a research physician in a highly specialized field of bladder cancer. She was previously employed by the University of Minnesota and was forced from her position for the reasons set forth in both her affidavits and the briefs. She had ultimately no option but to leave that position at the University of Minnesota. And the field of employment is so narrow that there were very, very few options here in Minnesota, two of those being where she was currently employed, the University of Minnesota, and the other being the Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota. My client did provide a start date to the Cleveland Clinic shortly before the court.
Well, Mr. Marsh, I did have one question. Is it correct that the parenting consultant favored having the children remain with the respondent in Rochester?
I wouldn't say that is correct. I think the parenting consultant looked at this from the viewpoint of my client living in Ohio and there being no other option, given that the court had denied the request for the children to be relocated there. The parenting consultant was clear that the children missed their mother and that their overall development was being impeded by not being in her care. But the parenting consultant did not have the authority to make that happen to allow the relocation. So to say that the parenting consultant was in favor.
What was the parenting consultant's position then?
The parenting consultant's position, it was that mother, if possible, should move back to Minnesota for the betterment of the children.
Mr. Marsh, you mentioned in the beginning that you thought the district court erred in several of the factors that it applied. Which ones do you think, from your client's perspective, were the most egregious?
I think the most egregious would be the third factor, the feasibility of preserving the relationship between the non-relocating parent and the children. The fifth factor, whether there was an established...
On that one, why did the district court get it wrong?
Well, the district court discussed this factor and found that parenting time would be comparable in time to the current schedule, but not comparable in quality. And I don't think that was the standard. What we're looking at is suitability. I don't think that the district court went on to talk about the father not being able to participate in school conferences, extracurricular activities, and athletic events, that they couldn't be replicated by Skype and FaceTime and those types of things, which is accurate. My client was not claiming that things could be replicated, but the standard is whether there were suitable arrangements that could be made. And this would allow for even more parenting time than the respondent had initially. And had if the standard was comparability or even replication, as the respondent mentions in his responsive brief.
Well, I mean, you know, whether it's suitability or comparability, I think the district court was trying to get to the point that, you know, it's very different. You know, Skyping is different from actually attending the children's games and parent conferences. I fail to see how that's incorrect.
And it is different, conferences and activities and athletic events. But
so to use your words, why then would it be still suitable?
The suitability is that in the time, he's actually having more time. He would continue to have a significant summer parenting time. But I think if you look at this from a practical perspective, it would be very exceedingly rare that a move from state case would allow the party remaining in Minnesota to attend school conferences and extracurricular activities and athletic events, absent a move to Hudson, Wisconsin, or somewhere that is relatively close. But if we're looking at that as a bar for moving from the state, then I think it would be an incredibly rare instance when a parent would be granted that request. And I don't think that's what the legislature had intended in drafting the statute.
Mr. Marsh,
go ahead, Judge Ross.
I have to say that I'd like you to try to push me off of this hill if you can, because I'm troubled by the gravity of your brief feels so heavily angled toward discretionary calls by the district court, the weight to be given to different particulars, whether this or that is practical or impractical. It feels like a powerful district court argument that you've made that you convert to an appellate argument, and I have a hard time feeling the issues of law being the kind of issues that we would reverse on. It feels like you're arguing really that the district court improperly weighed certain factors and approached it differently than you believe the district court should have. So that's my concern, and you can convince me I'm wrong.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's accurate to say that this is a very factually heavy case, that we have factors that the statute provides, and what we're looking at is whether the district court followed those factors or not. The law here is fairly straightforward, and we're not arguing that there's, you know, a constitutionality issue or something along those lines. But when you do dig into the facts and what has been applied to these factors, that is the heart of the argument here. The district court relies frequently on statements from the parenting consultant. But again, looking at the record as a whole, many of those statements are taken either out of context or the opposite side of these things is ignored. And I think an example—
Again, this tends to go, again, to the weight of the evidence. You know, district court's not considering contrary testimony or contrary views, not looking at this broadly enough. Can you identify for me the argument in your brief that you would say is most evidently a legal rather than a factual argument over discretionary things?
I think the legal piece of this, it really is a weight of the evidence, and I can't say that it's not. I think that is what we're dealing with here, is my client's relying on the record evidence, and that the court just did not weigh that properly.
It feels then you're asking us to substitute our judgment.
Or more importantly, reweigh. I mean, are you asking us to reweigh the evidence?
I think that
that's a trap, by the way.
I understand that. I think the I think a review of the record in its totality would leave my client's position is that it should leave the court with the impression that there has been clear error made here, that there is just so much in support of the move that was either disregarded, discounted, or simply ignored, that my client does not believe that the factors would have been applied correctly here.
Which case would you cite that would give us the strongest basis to reverse based upon the argument that you're presenting, which is that in the totality of all of the evidence, the district court should have come to a different decision in its discretionary role?
I believe that and that is a difficult question to answer in the sense that the case law around move from state cases, it does focus heavily on facts and whether the district court gave either appropriate weight or whether the weight of the evidence was in supportive of the district court's conclusion.
I guess I'm looking for a case that supports your view that reversal is appropriate here. So what case have you found where our court or the Supreme Court has reversed a discretionary decision regarding relocation in a manner that most closely resembles this case?
And there are very few, if any, cases where a request to relocate was reversed. There have been, I believe and I'm trying to locate it in my brief. And I apologize. The Tompak v. Tompak case that was cited, and it is an unpublished decision that was cited in both appellant's and the respondent's brief, is probably the strongest in support of what my client is asserting here, and that there are cases where a parent has no choice at all but to relocate. And I don't believe that was given appropriate weight or consideration by the district court, given her immigration status, which was fairly central to this particular case.
Well, one might, I think, read the Tomcat case, even if it were precedential, as perhaps not being on all fours with this case. Address what appears to be the most obvious distinguishing characteristics between that case and this one.
I think the most obvious distinction is the appellant in Tompak was essentially an out-of-work nurse. Hadn't worked for 5 years and decided she wanted to pursue a career in Wisconsin. There were a denial of two motions in that case, so there is some parallel there. But we have here, though, is a research physician in an incredibly specialized field dealing with immigration issues. She's here on an H-1B visa, which requires employer sponsorship. And on top of that, we have two U.S. citizen children, and my client is attempting to maintain her EB-1 priority status, which just bumps her closer to the front of the line when it comes to obtaining permanent residency. And so the court in Tompak found that the move by the appellant was voluntary. Here, that's not the case. And my client was left with little choice but to move to Ohio. And when the district court considered this, they found that she could remain in Minnesota in some other capacity. And unfortunately, that capacity would force her to change career paths, downgrade her status, and certainly put her ability to obtain permanent residency in question, or at least substantially delayed. And so her employment position, I think, is the biggest distinction here. And really just the lack of employment options throughout Minnesota. This is a case where she had to conduct a nationwide search for employment if she were going to be doing so. I see I do just have a minute left, and so I will just I want to reiterate the parenting consultant, the child consultant, and the children's therapist in this matter made a number of statements that were supportive of the children essentially maintaining the primary residence with mother. And those included the children not achieving optimal development were they not in mother's care. And things along those lines were simply discounted by the court. And again, if this is a matter of the PC not being credible, then it would be difficult to understand why the district court relied on the PC for a number of other arguments and points to make in opposition of her motion to relocate. With that, it appears I'm out of time, absent any further questions.
Thank you very much, counsel. Seeing no questions, we'll turn to counsel for respondent.
Thank you. Good morning again, everyone. It's good to be with you, and it's good to be with my colleague, Mr. Marsh. I think, as you might expect, the questions asked went to the heart of my argument and why I feel that the district court did not abuse its discretion. And I think the best argument or the best outcome that appellant could hope for would be this panel's viewing the evidence and saying, well, we might have done something different. But even with that, which I don't think you can do, of course, but even with that, it would not justify a reversal of the district court's decision. I think it's important to recall that appellant got this ball rolling. Everything started with her attempt to get a better job. And that's saying something, considering she was earning well over $200,000 a year at a stable position at the University of Minnesota. She'd been promoted, she'd received raises. And her justification for the move in 2019 was, this is a once in a lifetime opportunity. Cleveland is awesome. I should be able to go. And dad's time will be at least numerically the same. So please let me go. And the district court went through an exhaustive process. It reviewed all the affidavits and the documents submitted with those pleadings and said, no, you did not make the case that the children's best interest compelled a move. And instead of appealing that, appellant decided to move anyway. And there's some question as to when she actually took the job. I'm not sure it matters, but she ended up moving anyway. And tried again. And this time she retrospectively colored the circumstances surrounding her departure. It wasn't anymore.
Mr.
Yes, Your Honor.
We've all read the briefs and, okay, you know, that's certainly, you know, one version of the events. I mean, isn't another version of the events is between, so are you saying we should just, that Mr. Marsh's client was lying when she brought up issues of harassment, and that was really the reason for the move to Cleveland?
I would not accuse anyone of lying, particularly in this forum. I would not be surprised if those issues were exaggerated, but I don't know. I don't think any real evidence was ever presented to the district court that these things were going on, that she was being harassed, that her immigration status was at risk. And that's part of the point of the argument, Your Honor, is I don't think appellant ever made the case. So I'm not going to call her a liar. I'm just going to say she didn't make her case.
I mean, I'm certainly not going to penalize anyone for trying to make more money going somewhere else. I mean, I think that's a wonderful thing. And for all I know, the Cleveland Clinic is a once in a lifetime opportunity. What about the arguments Mr. Marsh makes about, you know, her immigration status is different now than it was when she was in Minnesota? Is that incorrect? And should not that play a role in the district court's decision as to whether, you know, under whichever factor you want, but basically in the basic decision that, you know, this should be considered because obviously she's going to have a much different relationship if she's deported than if she's in America, where her children, she obviously wants them to remain in America because they're citizens. So what about the immigration issues?
Well, I don't pretend to be an expert on that area, Your Honor, but I will say that the district court fully considered these arguments, and I don't know that appellant made the case that I was about to be deported. What she argued was that this could happen maybe someday, but she didn't provide any evidence that it was going to happen.
And as I understand it, you each had immigration attorneys present evidence, and
right.
Obviously they were of different views. And so your point is the district court believed your expert attorney rather than Mr. Marsh's.
And yes, and
okay, I got
and it. And in addition to that, made a specific conclusion or finding that appellant had not exhausted her job opportunities in Minnesota. I don't begrudge anyone trying to improve their career to your earlier
seriously,
point.
Do you think she was going to go to Mayo? I mean, seriously.
No, but that's not, she was
where
happy.
Where is she going to go? Sorry. Park Nicollet?
I mean,
this seems to be a very, you know, this is not like, you know, what she does is seems to be very focused. And my hunch is, you know, there aren't that many places, and there's certainly not many places outside of Mayo or the U. I mean, you know, she wasn't going to go to Moorhead, you know, not that I have anything against Moorhead, but, you know, that's not something that was an option for her. So, I mean, where else was she going to go in Minnesota? Or do you think she was just going to become a GP?
Well, Your Honor, I would respectfully answer the question with this. What made her go in the first place? She was fine. She had been promoted. She was making more money. She is the one, to go back to how I started, she's the one that got this whole ball rolling. Okay. And I shouldn't have said okay there. I'm sorry. She did not demonstrate with any documents or evidence that my job at the U was in danger. They were about to fire me. And if that happened, I was going to be at risk for deportation. That is not what happened. What she argued was, I wanted to leave. They got mad at me. So then I felt like I had to leave. That's her argument, Your Honor. So this I think it's an incorrect predicate to suggest she had to go. Where else could she go? She is a very talented doctor. I imagine that she's highly employable in whatever she wants to do. My understanding of the immigration law is that as long as someone hires her to do something associated with research, that her green card status would be protected, much like it is with my client. So to answer your question directly, no, I didn't expect her to go to Mayo. I didn't expect her to go at all. I expected her to stay at the University of Minnesota, which she had chosen a few years ago when she moved from Florida. So that would be my point there, Your Honor.
Do you disagree at all with the argument? As I understand, the argument isn't about immediate deportation. It's about the type of visa that would be available in a research position as opposed to a practitioner in her specialty, and that there were limited opportunities for the research-related position, and that it would change. She may not be deported, but it would change her. She would need a different visa. She wouldn't qualify for the other visa, need a different visa, and that could have an impact down the road on the length of time, et cetera. So can you speak to that issue? That's what I think the argument is.
Sure, I think there's the first response, Your Honor, is that our immigration expert found that she would not be restricted, that she was highly employable, and that it was highly likely that another medical facility of some sort would hire her under such circumstances that they could renew her green card status, thereby protecting her ability to remain in the United States. My second answer to that, to go back to my earlier comments and to reflect back on TOMPAC, is that even if all this is true, if appellant's the one that got this whole thing started, it's not appropriate to visit the consequences of that on respondent. This this family had gone through a contentious process, had finally reached a decision, had agreed to share custody, joint physical and legal custody, had worked out parenting time, were working with a parenting consultant, and mother decided, or appellant decided in 2019, I'm going to upset the apple cart. And then when that didn't work, again, not to be repetitive, but she just tried another tack. And I think that's what this is about. The first set of rationale did not work for her. So now she's trying this, the second approach, which I don't think should work either. And I think a clear review of the record shows that the district court considered everything. It read all of her affidavits and attachments, and it looked at deposition transcripts, and it looked at my client's affidavits, and it did a detailed analysis and made its decision. And I certainly don't begrudge appellant disagreeing with the decision, that's fine, but there's no legal mechanism that I believe would allow this court to insert its judgment for the referee in the district court and say, well, not only would we have ruled differently, but we're gonna reverse the whole thing, and we're gonna order the children to move to Ohio in the middle of all this. So I think that's the issue with appellant's argument. And I think a review of the record shows, and I have wanted to make this clear, appellant is a really good mom. She's a really good caretaker. I don't think she's a particularly good co-parent, but in terms of her caregiving for the children, she's great. And my client has said repeatedly that his preference would be for her to move back to Minnesota. And whether they go back to the way things were or not, I don't know. But that is the mechanism or the circumstance he thinks that would be in the children's best interest. His idea of the children's best interest is not her in Ohio and him in Minnesota. It's both of the parties in Minnesota. So this is not about a denigration of appellant or her career or anything of the sort. It's I would imagine a criticism of some of the co-parenting decisions she's made. And the idea that while no one can begrudge the concept of, hey, there's this really cool job in Ohio, it'd be really awesome, I should try to get it. But if you have a co-parent in Minnesota, the law basically says you're going to, over that parent's objection, you're going to have to prove it's in the children's best interest. And she was never able to do that. She, and again, I don't want to repeat myself, but she was never able to prove to the district court that the kids needed to move, whatever mechanism she tried. So I think, you know, Mr. Marsh is an exceptional attorney. I think he's done the best job he could under the circumstances, but I think this is a, and I don't think any of these cases are easy, but I do think that the Court of Appeals must offer the district court a great deal of discretion here. And unless it feels that a clear mistake was made, that the district court's ruling should be upheld. I don't have anything else unless you have further questions, Your Honors.
It appears not. Thank you very much, Mr. Kretschmer. Mr. Marsh, your rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honors. I did want to touch on this immigration issue a little bit more as Mr. Kretschmer discussed it. I don't believe that the parties independent, they each had an attorney, an immigration attorney weighing in on this. And I don't believe that their opinions diverge significantly as far as the, you know, what the statuses are and the priorities, et cetera. The key here is that the attorney hired by respondent indicated appellant could remain in Minnesota, but would have to take a job as a GP, for example, as you mentioned, and it would allow her to maintain, some sort of status to stay here. It would not allow her to maintain that priority status, or even as important, continue in that the very important line of work that she's in. She has a couple of two different grants now that she's working on through the Cleveland Clinic that are from, and I believe it's the Department of Defense, that are not transferable. these aren't things that can go with her. And it is incredibly important work that she's doing. And that she's been put in this very difficult position of she felt she could not stay at the University of Minnesota. So does she need to choose her career or the children? And she's doing her best to choose both. And that's part of the, you know, kind of the heart of her argument here, is that she really wasn't left with a choice, a legitimate choice. And given the, again, the support of the parenting consultant, the child's therapist, children's therapist, and the child consultant, you know, being supportive of the children remaining in her primary care, that is what she believes to be best. I did want to, I guess, circle back to two of the additional factors that my client believes were misapplied. The first being the age and developmental stage, needs of the child, and the key here is the likely impact relocation will have on the children's physical, educational, and emotional development. That is something that the appellant does not feel the district court addressed. There was an acknowledgement that mother provided a comparison of schools between Minneapolis and Ohio, but not Rochester, where the children currently are. The focus of the district court was on the potential transition and the father's parenting time and the quality of care he was providing, but not on that kind of that likely impact that relocation would ultimately have. And in that same vein, the sixth factor, whether relocation would enhance the general quality of life, both the custodial parent and the children. Appellant here does not believe that the district court fully addressed that factor. The district court focused on mother's ability to return to Minnesota, which is not what the factor is requesting be addressed here. It's essentially what would happen if the children were relocated, and that was not addressed. The district court focused on these transitional issues, but there would be transitions regardless. If mother returned to Minnesota, there would be a transition. If she resumed living in Minneapolis, you know, we're looking at potential transitions back to the prior arrangements. But it was simply client felt that the statute mandated a review or an examination of what would happen were the children to move, and that just simply didn't happen here. I don't need to use up all of the time. I think to Judge Ross's point, this is very factually heavy, and I'm not going to deny that. But I think what your honors have the ability to do is look and find determine whether the findings are contrary to the facts of the record and or logic. And here there is overwhelming evidence that a mother did present the district court with information that would support her move, and the district court cherry picked a number of statements from the parenting consultant, a number of facts that were out of context, and ignored a lot of the rest. And I think the support for the district court's ultimate finding is undermined by the record evidence. And that is all I have. I thank your honors for your time.
Thank you both. Thank you for your arguments. They're very helpful and straightforward. I appreciate that. The case is submitted and we'll have a decision out in a statutory time period. Thanks.
Thank you, everyone. Goodbye.